I deal with skeptics on a regular basis, people who come to us and say, the Bible is not God's Word. It is filled with things that simply can't be true. And one of the things that lots of people get on to us as Christians about is how God acted in the Old Testament. In fact, they would suggest that God was immoral, that God did things that we would consider to be less than correct. In fact, they say, you know, God killed lots of people in the Old Testament. In fact, not only did he kill lots of people, but sometimes he would wipe out whole nations. Sometimes he would have his chosen people, the Israelites, kill whole nations when they would go into the land of Canaan. And so lots of times the skeptic will attack God's allowing people to be killed in the Old Testament. I want to read to you a quote from Richard Dawkins in his book, The God Delusion. He says, the God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Now, notice the loaded way that he writes this. He suggests that the Bible is fiction. It's not, and we're not going to take time to deal with every single thing he says here. But he says, he is jealous, the God of the Bible, and proud of it. He's petty, unjust, unforgiving, a control freak, vindictive, bloodthirsty, ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully. Now, some of those words are intentionally big and hard to understand, just so the force of that statement will wave over you like, wow, God has all of these negative traits. But a couple of them I want to look at there that are highlighted. Bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser means God has killed certain nations. And then look right there. Infanticidal means God has killed or ordered the death of babies or infants. Genocidal, meaning that God has killed certain groups of people. And then filicidal, meaning that he has killed, there again, certain groups of people. So, here's what Richard Dawkins says. God kills people in the Old Testament. How can you worship a God that kills people in the Old Testament? Now, if you and I are honest, you know, sometimes we read through some of that stuff and we think, yeah. I mean, how does God, if God's perfectly moral and if God is all-loving, what's up with all these stories about God killing people in the Old Testament? It's a good question, isn't it? Now, the way that Richard Dawkins frames it, he's trying to put you in a certain frame of mind before you answer it honestly, but really it is a good question. Now, let's go to some of the other unbelievers that would have something to say about this. All right, a guy by the name of Christopher Hitchens. He says, God is an evil monster whose actions and instructions in the Old Testament caused the ground to be soaked forever with the blood of the innocent. Dan Barker says, a guy I debated in 2009, there is not enough space to mention all of the places in the Bible where God committed, commanded, or condoned murder. Now, is it true that God committed and commanded and condoned murder? Well, maybe murder is a shaded word to use, but if we were just to ask, has God killed people in the Old Testament? You know, the thing not to do when you're answering questions like this is try to ignore or try to get around the real question. Has God himself killed people? Yeah. Did he do that on numerous occasions? Absolutely. So, was he immoral when he did it? And that's the question. The irony of the atheist when they ask is basically what they're trying to say is God is doing something wrong. Now stop right there and ask yourself how they can make that statement. Where would a person who says that there's no God get a concept of right and wrong? Where does morality come from? You see, if there is no God and there's no moral standard, the atheistic community certainly can't accuse somebody else of being immoral if they can't tell you what moral really means. And what we're going to find out is atheism can't even ask moral questions because atheism doesn't give you anything that allows you to make an assessment of whether something's right or wrong. Now, let me show you what I mean by that. This man is named William Provine. He's from Cornell University. He was invited to do a speech on Darwin Day, and this is what his speech consisted of. He said, "Naturalistic evolution has clear consequences that Charles Darwin understood perfectly." He said, "Here are those consequences. Here are five of them. Number one," he said, "no gods worth having exist. Number two, no life after death exists. Number three, no ultimate foundation for ethics exists. Number four, there's no ultimate meaning in life. And number five, human free will is non-existent." Now, he's saying if evolution is true and there is no God, then there are certain implications from that. There are certain things that you are forced to draw from that. And one of those is that there's no foundation for ethics. Who says that something's right or wrong? What, the atheist who's accusing God is the one who makes up the rules for what is right and what is wrong? You see, what William Provine is saying is, without a God, you don't have a moral standard. There was a girl by the name of Lisa Labresco. She was writing for the Atheist Portal blog spot, and she was a very popular blogger. In fact, if I understand it correctly, tens of thousands of people would come and read her blog every day. And for quite some time, she wrote against God and the God of the Bible, basically said God is a figment of human imagination and people just made God up. But then one day, she started asking her atheistic friends, "Where do we get the idea that some things are right and some things are wrong?" And her atheistic friends would say, "Well, we evolved certain abilities to think that some things are helpful to society and some things are not, etc." And she never got a legitimate answer. And so she would ask all of her atheistic friends that she could, "Where does this idea of right and wrong come from?" And she never got a sufficient answer. And so she wrote one day, "This is my last blog for Atheistic Portal, and here's why." She said, "Because morals are not created by humans. We uncover them like archaeologists. We don't build them like architects." And she said, "Atheism never could give me a satisfactory answer for how some things could be right and how some things could be wrong." In fact, in the debate that I just had in April of this year with an agnostic by the name of Bart Ehrman, I presented him with this syllogism. If there are absolute moral values, then there is a God. Evil exists. Evil is an absolute moral value. Therefore, there is a God. What he stated was, no, there are no absolute moral values. But do you understand what's being said there? You can't say absolutely whether something is right or wrong according to atheism. You've got no foundation for it. You can say, "I don't like it." You can say, "I think it should be a different way." You can say, "I don't think it'll help society." But you can't say it's wrong. And so the irony of the first part of this discussion is, where would an atheist get the ability or the prerogative to sit in judgment on anyone else and say that is wrong for you to do? Well, they just can't do that. Friedrich Nietzsche said this, "We believe that severity, violence, slavery, danger in the street, in the heart, secrecy, stoicism, tempter's art, devilry of every kind, that everything wicked, terrible, tyrannical, predatory, and serpentine in man serves as well for the elevation of the human species as the opposite." He says, you know what? You may not like it when somebody follows a guy to Walmart and when he comes out, shoots him in the chest and steals his F-150 truck just because he likes the color of it. You might not like that. But it just could be that the man who murdered that guy got a less fit organism out of the picture, and humans might can now evolve to a higher level. And so that's probably good for humanity, even though you don't really like it. Do you see the problem there? Ultimately, atheism cannot give you a foundation for any type of ethics. Charles Darwin, here's what he said. "A man who has no assured and ever-present belief in the existence of a personal God or of a future existence with retribution and reward, heaven and hell, can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow those impulses and instincts which are the strongest or which seem the best to him." He said, look, if you don't believe there's a God, there's really only one way that you can live, as far as I can tell. Just do what you really feel like you want to do. You follow the instincts and impulses that seem the best to you, and really, ultimately, if there's not a God, nobody can tell you you're doing anything wrong. You see, that's atheism's major problem. Atheism would love to sit in judgment on God's actions and say, those are wrong, those are wrong, those are wrong. But when you get down to the foundation of atheism, they don't have a place to stand in which they could make those kinds of judgments. So the first problem is, they just simply cannot make moral judgments. Jeffrey Dahmer, a serial killer who killed several people, about 19, said, if a person doesn't think there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought, anyway. When Jeffrey's dad, Lionel, asked him when he first felt that everyone is accountable for their actions, here's what Dahmer said. Well, thanks to you for sending that creation science material, because I always believed the lie that evolution is the truth, the theory of evolution is truth, that we all just came from slime, and when we died, you know, that was it. There was nothing. So the whole theory cheapens life. So if you are trying to accuse somebody of being immoral, we would simply ask the atheist, where do you get a foundation to make that accusation? And if you look at their writings, they have to admit, well, we don't like it. We think it's not good. We think it's not beneficial to society. No, hold on. I'm asking you, where do you get the foundation to say it's wrong? And they don't have one. And so, we could just dismiss this whole thing by saying, you can't even make that accusation. Now, we're not going to do that, but we could. Richard Dawkins, individual atheists may do evil things, but they don't do evil things in the name of atheism. That's just simply not the case. In fact, a man by the name of Pekka Erik Ovinen described himself as a cynical existentialist, anti-humanist, anti-social Darwinist, and realistic idealist, and a godlike atheist. He went into his old school, shot the headmistress and 9 other people. This is what he posted on his website before he did this. And he said, I, as a natural selector, will eliminate all who I see unfit, disgraces of human race, and failures of natural selection. Did Richard Dawkins say people may do bad things, but they don't do bad things in the name of atheism? Well, that's just simply not true. You see, atheism doesn't have a foundation to say that is wrong. Now, they like to, and they like to appeal to some commonly held idea that things are wrong, but you can't give them that. So, let's continue. Is it true that much of the killing in the Old Testament was of adults who deserved it? No, that's a good question. Is that the case? Yeah. The fact of the matter is, when Dan Barker says there's not enough space to mention all the places in the Bible where God committed, condoned, or commanded murder, much of what he calls murder is not murder at all. In fact, lots of it is of people who absolutely deserved the death penalty. Let me show you what I mean by that. Now, there are all kinds of discussions about whether the death penalty is a moral thing or not, but I think what you will see is if there is an all-powerful God who knows what a person's life would do if it were allowed to be continued to live in this world, and it would cause this world to be a much worse place, and God gives that life, then God is in the position to say, this person who is a vile murderer deserves the death penalty. Now, in the Old Testament, that's what God was saying in many of these instances. Leviticus chapter 18, 24 through 25. The text says, do not defile yourself with any of these things. For by all these the nations are defiled, which I'm casting out before you. For the land is defiled, therefore I visit the punishment of its iniquity upon it, and the land vomits out its inhabitants. Now, what was it that these people were doing that was so bad that God felt like it was legitimate to wholesale annihilate all of the adults who were involving themselves in this? Well, you can listen to some of it yourself. Dan Barker says in his debate with Peter Payne, maybe some of these men were guilty of war crimes. Do you know what some of the people in the land of Canaan were doing? In fact, many of them. The sexual promiscuity that was going on in the land of Canaan was of such a degree that there is a likely chance that virtually everybody in the land of Canaan had some very serious sexually transmitted diseases. In fact, part of the Canaanite god and goddess worship was that many times once your daughter reached the age that they could send her into a temple to prostitute her in that temple, they would. Many of the gods that were worshipped in the Canaanite land, you sacrificed your son or your daughter to that god. If you read the Old Testament, you will see a prohibition against allowing your sons and daughters to pass through the fire to Molech. That was a very literal killing of your firstborn son or daughter. They offered that son or daughter to the idol Molech. You have entire nations who are involving themselves in profane, horrendous, ungodly, immoral, terrible practices. And so, Dan Barker has to admit, okay, hold on just a second. I said God commanded and condoned and committed murder. But it could be true that a lot of what you're reading in the Old Testament, it could be true that a lot of that is dealing with people who actually deserve it. Okay? So, let's take that first statement that was made by Dawkins and by Barker, and let's wipe out lots of that. Because could it be true that all the adults that were killed deserved the death penalty because they were involving themselves in serious, heinous, immoral practices? That could be the case. So what does that then leave the atheist with? Well, okay, maybe the adults were guilty. But now watch what Barker says in his debate with Peter Payne. He says, maybe some of them were guilty, Peter. All right, I'll give you that. Some of them could have been killed. But what about the children, the fetuses, all the innocent kids that God killed? Okay, now, has God killed innocent kids? When the flood came, estimated about 2 billion people in the world, 8 people were saved on the ark, the other 2 billion approximately were all killed by water. Were some of those kids? Absolutely, positively. In fact, probably several millions of those were innocent children. So how can God do that? That's what Dan Barker's saying to Peter Payne in this. All right, some people I could see God killing. But what about the innocent children? Now, here's what Dan Barker's trying to say. We, as atheists, would never permit that. Now, he's lying. That's not true. In fact, what you're going to see is that if atheism really is the case, if there is no God and you don't have any moral standard, then the leading atheists themselves are going to say, well, you know what, killing a kid here and there is not really that big of a deal. Now, that sounds almost like a straw man. It sounds like surely atheists wouldn't really say that. But I'm going to let you see that they really do say that. Continue with me. This is a man by the name of Peter Singer. Peter Singer is recognized as the world's leading ethicist. Peter Singer is an atheist, and here's what he says. If we compare a severely defective human infant with a non-human animal, a dog or pig for an example, we'll often find the non-human to have superior capacities. Only the fact that the defective infant is a member of the species Homo sapien leads it to be treated differently from the dog or the pig. Species membership alone, however, is not morally relevant. He says, all right, let's see what we got here. We got a defective human. Maybe this human is physically defective. Maybe there are some mental problems with a human. And over here, we've got a German Shepherd dog. Now, the German Shepherd might be a really smart dog. In fact, it might be the case that you could train that German Shepherd to be a drug dog and he'd be very beneficial to society. This human may never get past a 2 or 3 year old mental level, or you might have to keep this human up because of physical disabilities. And so, if we compare this human to this German Shepherd, which one's going to be more valuable to society? The German Shepherd. He says, now, in the past, we would never keep the German Shepherd over the human for one reason. What's the reason? This one is a human. He says it's a member of the species Homo sapiens. It's a member of the human family. He said, but if we really evolve from animals and there is no God, where would you get the idea that humans are more special than other animals? You don't. See, if there's no God, you don't have any human value on life. It's just how beneficial is this life to society. Now, you could go back to the Founding Fathers and you could listen to them preempt this discussion, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And among those rights are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, where do you get the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Where does that come from? Well, you see, the Founding Fathers understood exactly where it comes from. It comes from an endowment by the Creator. If you take the Creator out of the picture, who gives humans the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? It's non-existent. Now, you don't have to take my word for that. This is Peter Singer, who Dan Barker says is the world's leading ethicist, who Richard Dawkins, in an interview with him, said to him, "You're the most moral man that I know in existence." Now, he says, you don't keep the human just because it's human. Continue with me. He said, James Rachels said that once the true moral implication of evolution is understood, now this is actually that the citing down there, this is supposed to be James Rachels in the Implications of Darwinism, is actually the book. Human life, he says, will no longer be regarded with a kind of superstitious awe, which it is accorded in traditional thought, and the lives of non-humans will no longer be a matter of indifference. This means that human life will, in a sense, be devalued, while the value granted to non-human life will be increased. He says, all right, if we really start seeing atheism and evolution for what it is, humans are going to be looked at just like animals. Now, if that's the case, really, if humans are looked at just like animals, do we kill animals for various things on a regular basis? Yeah. I mean, I was just down at McDonald's. I ordered a hamburger. What's a hamburger? Now, that's a cow. I was driving down the road. I saw some cows right there. Boom. Went to McDonald's. Ate a hamburger. All right? If we just start viewing humans like animals, then what would happen? Well, you don't have to take my word for it. There again, these are supposed to be some of the leading atheistic teachers in the world. In fact, James Rachels, if I understand it, was a professor on the campus of University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. He said some unfortunate humans, perhaps because they've suffered brain damage, they're not rational agents. Well, what are we to say about them? The natural conclusion, according to the doctrine we're considering, would be that their status is that of mere animals, and perhaps we should go on to conclude that they may be used as non-human animals, or used, perhaps as laboratory subjects or as food. Now, folks, this man says this with a straight face. He, at the time that he lived, was one of the leading professors of atheism. He was very well known. His book has been widely sold. I'm not making this up. That's what I want you to understand. This is not Kyle Butt says this is the implication of atheism. This is the leading atheists say this is the implication of atheism. Now, what are they accusing God of doing? You see, they're accusing God of being unjust and immoral for having killed innocent children. But what they're saying is, well, hold on just a second. Really, human life doesn't have any more value than animal life. And if there's not a God to have put a soul in humans, if you're not made in the likeness and the image of God, is that true? Well, if you're not, it is true, but we hold these truths to be self-evident. What does self-evident mean? You don't really even need to explain them. They're so very true that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with inalienable rights. That's where you get the value of human life. You understand what we're saying there? Continue with me. Peter Singer, now watch this. Follow the thought here. That a fetus, an unborn baby, unborn human baby, is known to be disabled is widely accepted as grounds for abortion. Now, we as Christians would never accept that. In fact, the Bible says that from the point of conception, that's when human life originates, and a child is a child is a child, whether it's born or whether it's unborn. But what he's saying is, all right, guys, for years in the atheistic unbelieving community, we have said that if it's an unborn child and it's got some defect, then you can have an abortion. That's what we've always said. Now, watch what he says. Yet, in discussing abortion, we say that birth does not mark a morally dividing line. Now, stop right there. That's where he and we agree. Have we always said birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line? Yeah, a baby is just as much of a baby one day before it's born as it is one day after it's born. That's what we have always contended. Children are children. Okay, finally, we agree on something. All right, if Peter Singer says that children our children a day before they're born or a day after they're born, and birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line, then aren't we making some progress here? We're meeting together. We've always said birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line. So what then should he say? If birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line, that means you can't kill a kid before he's born, just like you can't kill a kid after he's born. Oh, no, that's not what he says. He says, we've always said you could kill a kid before it's born. And if birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line, then what? Follow the thought. Well, then we should be able to kill them after they're born. I'm not making this up. Continue with me. I cannot see how we could defend the view that a fetus may be replaced before birth, but newborn infants may not. He says, I'm just not understanding this. How are you guys coming to the conclusion that, yeah, you can abort a child, but 3 days after it's born, you couldn't kill it? That doesn't make any sense to me. Birth's not a morally dividing line. Continue with me. Oh, he says, I don't have the other quote, but here's what he says. He says, thus, after we look at it, we conclude that sometimes killing an infant is not wrong at all. Now, like I said, here's what I... Did I tell you, did I try to warn you that atheism can't give you a standard by which you can make decisions about what's right and wrong? That's what I said. Now, these are the leading atheists in the world who are saying, you know what, if you could kill a child before it's born, then you could kill one after. So he even goes on to say, you know what, I think that if you just let the doctors and the parents have a time period after a child is born, like maybe a week or 2 weeks or a month, then after they assess the child's capabilities a month after the child is born, if they come to decide that it's not going to be beneficial to society to let this kid live, then a month after it's born, it'd be all right to replace it, he says. He doesn't use words like kill. He says replace. You're seeing how atheism is not in a position to accuse God of immorality. Now, continue with me. Dr. Eric Pianka, he stood up in 2006 in a lecture that he was doing in Texas, and he said humans are the problem with this planet, and we need to eliminate 90% of them. And in 2006, he said, what I think we need is something like airborne Ebola virus. That rings hauntingly close to home now, doesn't it? He said, yeah, we need to eliminate 90% of the human population because humans are stifling the growth of other organisms in the world. Now, this was the Texas Scientist of the Year, and he got a standing ovation for saying it. So, who is this accusing God of being immoral? Well, atheism does not give you a foundation to say this, and atheism ultimately taking it to its implied conclusions, it's got no problem killing humans, babies, etc. Now, continue with me. Atheism, Barbara Burke, in her article Infanticide, said, among some animal species, infant killing appears to be a natural practice. Could it be natural for humans too? A trait inherited from our primate ancestry. Charles Darwin noted in The Descent of Man that infanticide has been probably the most important checks on population of everything that, the most important of all checks on population growth throughout most of human history. She said, look, if we're evolved animals, do you know what 10% of the Komodo dragon's diet is? Baby Komodo dragons. 10% of the Komodo dragon diet is baby Komodo dragons. That's how they keep the population in check. How do humans keep the population in check? According to Darwin. Abortion. You just kill the babies if you have too many of them. And now, what are you accusing God of having done? Being immoral somehow for killing innocent children, and yet atheism comes out that they don't necessarily have a problem killing innocent children if they thought that that child wouldn't help society, etc. The implication of atheism is humans are on par with animals. They both have equal value. That's the implication. And they're admitting that. Sam Harris said, many of us consider human fetuses in the first trimester to be more or less like rabbits, having imputed to them a range of happiness and suffering that does not grant them full status in our moral community. And they're rabbits. In the first trimester, first 3 months, we think that they are on par with animals. And we haven't granted them full status in our moral community. What's he saying? Well, there's no reason we should let them live if we don't want to because why? Because atheism gets to make up whoever it wants to say, well, this one is we can keep and this one we won't. Now, since when has that ever been moral? Well, like we said, I'm having to rush through this just a tad so we can get into a little bit more of this, but I think you're seeing the point. Atheism can't make moral decisions, and they certainly can't accuse God of killing innocent children when the implications of atheism are that would be perfectly okay. Continue with me. We're going, now, what's the difference between atheism's allowance of killing infants and God's? Is it just that, okay, well, hey, God has killed infants and atheism says that would be morally permissible, so we've got we've just got kind of a log jam here. We've got two positions, they're both about the same, and so one of them can't accuse the other one, they're both on par with each other, we're just kind of stuck. Is that what we've got? Well, not necessarily. In fact, not at all, and here's why. Because atheism thinks that life is all that there is. And when atheism says it's okay to kill an infant, then they're saying it's all right to take everything there is from a child. Follow the thought with me. In his book, Godless, Dan Barker says, this life is the only life we atheists have. Each decision is crucial. We'll be accountable for our actions right now. Life is dear. It's fleeting. It's vibrant. It's vulnerable. It's heartbreaking. It can be lost. It will be lost. But we exist now. We are caring, intelligent animals and can treasure our brief lives. He says, all right, guys, how much life do you get? This is it. Now think with me. If this is it, and atheism says it'd be all right to kill this child if he didn't reach a certain standard or something, what's he taking from the child? Everything that there is. If this life is all that there is, and the implications of atheism are it'd be all right to kill or permit the death of some children, then atheism is taking everything that there is. Now, is that what God is doing? Well, no, that's never been the biblical position. Physical life has never been all that there is. You see, the atheists look at this position of God's exterminating infants in the Old Testament and say that's immoral because they're saying that life is all there is, physical, bodily life on this earth. Is that true? If it's not true, then atheism's case crumbles. Let me show you what I mean by that. Jesus Christ, of course, in Matthew chapter 16, verse 26 says, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Of course, this is now getting into areas and territory that you are well acquainted with and well familiar with. What are we saying composes a human being? A soul and a body on this physical earth. Now, when the body dies, what happens to the soul? It doesn't die. It is separated from the physical body, and it goes into one of two places, goes into either paradise or torment, like we read about in the story that Jesus told about the rich man and Lazarus. And so, when a person physically dies, that's not the end of him. Now, atheism claims that's it. But if that's not it, then atheism's claim that God's immoral has a serious problem. And here's the serious problem with that. I want to ask you this question and listen closely. Is it or is it not the case that sometimes physical life is not as valuable to a person as that person's death? Let me rephrase it. Could it be that for an individual, death might be better than physical life? Now, you think about that for a second, then I'm going to give you some backing from the Bible, and we're going to ask and answer that question from several verses. What does Paul say in Philippians chapter 1, verses 21 through 23? For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. Yet, if I live on in the flesh, that will mean fruit from my labors, but what I shall choose I cannot tell, for I'm hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you, and knowing this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith. What does he say is far better? To depart and to be with Christ. So, let's go back to our question. Is it better for certain individuals to die and depart this life and go to paradise? Yeah, it is. Now, here's the thing. Who's in a position to know who it's better for? And who's in a position to say it's time for this one or that one to go? Well, we humans are not in that position. But if you nail down the fact that death could be better for certain people, the next question would just simply be, okay, you said that God is immoral for killing babies in the Old Testament. Are the babies in the Old Testament in the category of the people who death could be better for? A good question. Continue with me. I love this verse because I think it really gives you some insight into how most people look at physical death and how God looks at physical death. The righteous perishes and no man takes it to heart. Now stop right there if you don't mind. It's very difficult to stop reading when it's right there in front of you. I know. I can see it's just hard, isn't it? In fact, when I say stop reading, lots of you just think, no, I'm going to read it anyway. You can stop right there. What does he mean when he says, and few take it to heart? Here's what he means. Most people don't think about this correctly. Most people have a misunderstanding of what happens when a person dies. He said, the righteous perish, and no man takes it to heart. People aren't understanding what's going on. Well, what is going on, Isaiah? What's happening here? Merciful men are taken away while no one considers that the righteous is taken away from evil. He shall rest. He shall enter into peace, they shall rest in their beds, each one walking in his own uprightness. When a person who is righteous dies, what is he taken away from? Evil. Do most people stop to consider that when somebody dies? No. In fact, most of the time, when somebody dies, we just think it's such a tragedy, don't we? We just think it's so terrible. I can't believe the Lord took that person, some people will say, when that person was only 33 or 34 or 35 years old. Now listen to me. If you really believe what the Bible says, that a righteous person will go into paradise when they die, for the person that has died, is it better for them to stay here or to go on? Well, who is it that it hurts when a righteous person leaves? Well, it hurts all those who are left here to cope with the suffering and the grief and the pain that emptiness leaves. But is it better for that person to be in paradise? Yeah. Now, wouldn't it be good if we would really think that way more often? Wouldn't it be good if when a righteous person who we know is a faithful member of the Lord's church passes on from this life, we would celebrate their life and be excited about their eternal destiny instead of thinking what we're missing? Wouldn't it be better to think what they're getting? You know, that's hard to do, isn't it? In fact, it's so hard that Isaiah says, most people, in fact, he uses hyperbole here when he says, no man considers. That doesn't mean no man. It's just like if you said everybody's at the party. It's a hyperbole. What is he saying there then? It could be better for certain people to die. Now, our next question is simply, what happened to my PowerPoint? That's the next question. We're going to need that up, guys. Oh, he says, wait 1 minute? Or was that 1 second? Nope, 1 second. It's not going to get it. Oh, look, it tells you, first bell. You know, that's one of the most refreshing bells I have heard. The last bell that I was interrupted by. I was standing at the pulpit, and it was really close to the baptistry, about an arm's length, and the bell was right here by the baptistry. I could almost touch it, and it sounded like a fire alarm when it went off. I mean, it scared me to death. I thought, oh, get out of here. You know, I thought something was happening. But anyway, all right, now, here's the next question. Of course, Psalm 116:15, precious in the sight of the Lord is what? The death of his saints. Now, really, all we've left ourselves to ask now is, if some people benefit from death, is it the people that the atheists are accusing God of killing? Do babies benefit from death? Now, from a worldly standpoint of physical life, the answer is no. If this life is all that there is and there's no soul and you don't go anywhere after this and this life is it, then no, there's no possible benefit. But that is assuming that there's no God and no soul in the first place. If there is a God and there is a soul, and we can say, yes, the people who were innocent that were killed in the Old Testament got a better reward than if they had lived, then how in the world could you accuse God of being immoral? You following the thought there? And then, if we were just to simply go and ask, do children go to heaven? And some people would contend, no. Some people who are staunch Calvinists say that people are born naturally depraved and that they, if they're not baptized as infants, they would go to hell. In fact, Martin Luther said that. Martin Luther said that if you don't baptize infants as soon as they come out and they die, then there's a good chance they will go to hell. That's just simply not the picture of what the Bible paints of children's lives. In fact, Matthew chapter 18, you've read it probably 100 times. Assuredly, I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you shall by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. What's God saying about children? You need to be like them. Why? Because they are innocent and ultimately they are saved if they die in their infancy and childhood. Luke 18:16, let the little children come to me and do not forbid them. Now watch this next statement. For of such is the kingdom of heaven. That of such right there says of this category composes the kingdom of heaven. What does he mean by that? These children are innocent and they are in a safe condition, and if they are to die, then they go to paradise. And that is a fact. While the child was alive, David says, I fasted and wept, talking about his son that Bathsheba gave birth to. For I said, who can tell whether the Lord will be gracious to me and that child may live? But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? That's a rhetorical question. What's the answer to that? No, I can't bring him back again, but I shall go to him. What's David saying? I'm going to go be with my child one day. When? David wrote the 23rd Psalm. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Where was David, through inspiration, expecting to see his newly born dead child? His physical body was there in front of him, but he was going to go somewhere to meet his child. Where was that? Paradise and ultimately heaven. So, is it the fact that... Okay, now we're going to have to go through this real quick. We've answered the question now. Here's what we've answered. We've answered how God could allow innocent people to die, or how he could command the death of innocent people, or how he could bring it about. Is it true that when an innocent person dies, they get a better reward than if they stayed here and lived on this earth? That's a fact. So, you can't accuse God of immorality if he gives them something better than they got now. Now, the next question is, well, why is he the only one that gets to make the decision? If that's true and babies are more innocent and people who are just now Christians, they're going to go to heaven, why not when you baptize them, you pull them out and shoot them in the head? You kill them, they go straight to heaven. Why wouldn't you do that? And here's the reason. You don't have the prerogative to do that. You haven't been given the authority to do that. Who has the authority over human life? Ultimately, that's the bell. Stick with me for 2 seconds. Oh, it doesn't even let you. It cuts you off. It puts the bell. All right, 2 seconds. Oh, come on. All right, here's what Dan Barker says. Follow me. He says, morality is simply acting with the intention to minimize harm. And he stated, the way to avoid making moral decisions is to be as informed as possible about the likely consequences of any action being considered. Now, who is the most informed individual about any consequences of the actions being considered? Who knows the implication of every single death in the world? God. If he is completely informed about every single fact, then he knows exactly who needs to live and he knows exactly who needs to die. So according to Dan Barker, God would be the perfect person to decide who lives and who dies. And ultimately, the only person to decide who lives and who dies. And so I think that you can see that when atheists accuse God of being immoral, they can't do it because they don't have a foundation for morality. Not only that, but they admit that atheism says you could take all that there is from a baby. And when you really look at it, you see God rewarding those innocent people who He allows to die with something better than they would have gotten if they stayed here. And how in the world can you accuse God of immorality when He gives something gives people something better than they would have gotten if they stayed here? You guys have listened so well. I greatly appreciate it. I hate that we had to rush through it, but that's just how it has to go if you're going to get any of this information in. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me this Wednesday night.